turned on. This is a meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. It's Tuesday, October 23rd at approximately 9:30 in the morning. We are here in the State Capitol Building. I'm Commissioner Dusty Johnson, and joining me today at the meeting are Commissioners Gary Hansen and Steve Kolbeck. We do have an agenda as well as an addendum to that agenda. We will begin first with administrative item number one, and that is for approval of the minutes of the commission meeting, which was held on October 7th, as well as for an ad hoc meeting, which was held on September 19th. Those meeting minutes have been circulated. Does anybody have any amendments or corrections to them? Hearing none, I will move to approve the minutes. Motion has been made. We'll proceed to vote. Kolbeck. Hansen?
Aye.
And Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Second item on the agenda is consumer reports, and at this time we will look to Ms. Gregg for her status update on consumer inquiries.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. The Commission has received a total of 70 contacts since the last report was prepared for the October 9th, 2007 Commission meeting. 13 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 20 of the contacts involved electrical services, 8 contacts involved natural gas services, 6 contacts involved cell phone service, 10 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, and 13 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,650 of the 1,890 complaints received in 2007 have been resolved, and 2,286 of the 2,466 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved.
Any questions for Ms. Gregg? And I have one. Have you heard much about the TransCanada Keystone project?
No, we have not. Just a few complainants that have written in that Karen and I have dealt with, okay. Which has probably been a handful.
Sure. I mean, if you start to hear much from telephone calls coming in, if you want to make that a part of your report in the future, that'd be great. If you're not hearing anything, certainly no need to mention it, but
okay.
Just curious.
Maybe.
Thanks very much. One thing I should have mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, but I erred in not doing so. You know, we've had a lot of activity in the courts, appellate courts, I think we've done pretty well. We've been well represented by our counsels, and that's been...
is joining the meeting.
In particular, we've won cases in the circuit court on a telecom case. Just last week, the Supreme Court upheld a decision on a territorial electric case. We won a circuit court appeal of our decision on the Big Stone 2 case, which is pending before the Supreme Court. We've argued cases in front of the federal courts as well recently, and I mean, obviously, a lot of those successes and good showings go because of Ms. Wiest and Mr. Smith. They've done an excellent job. They're fantastic attorneys. We're well served by them. But I also think it's worth mentioning that, you know, commissioners can't make good decisions, and John and Rolaine can't write good orders or defend decisions if there's not a good record. And certainly we've got a good record comes about not only because of parties to the case, but also because of commission staff, analysts and attorneys and others that work very hard to make sure that the real facts come out. And as a result, I think we've been upheld on a number of these, and hopefully we have one more coming. So thanks to everybody for all of that. With that, we'll proceed to electric item number one, EL07-022, and this deals with filing by Black Hills Power for approval of a contract with deviations with the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority. And the question for the commission today is simply, shall it approve that contract with deviations? And at this time, we'll look toward Black Hills Power for any comments they might have.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. This is Jim Keck. I'm our Energy Services Supervisor with Black Hills Power. And what we're doing today is we're asking the Commission to approve a contract with deviations with the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority. The deviation is from our standard general service large rate tariff. And what it does is it relieves a portion of the demand charges resulting primarily from their hoisting operations. The hoisting operation can produce large peak demands over very short periods of time. The potential discount for the lab amounts to approximately $169,000 over the first 18-month rehabilitation and commissioning period, and $55,000 a month during their initial ongoing operation. Now, the contract is a five-year contract and would revert after that time back to our standard general service large tariff. Black Hills, our we have our facilities are already in place to serve this type of load. Our facilities were in place to serve the Homestake mine and capable of 32 megawatts at one point in time. During the summer months, as far as how is this discount going to affect us during our peaking conditions in the summer, we have limited the discount in the summer months to an additional 1,000 kVA. If we happen to be in a system peaking condition, we can call them and basically have them curtail back to what their contract capacity is, so at that point in time there'd be no discount, or they would pay for the additional charges that they incur. So we feel we're covered over the summer months, and then certainly during the shoulder and winter months when we're not in our peaking conditions, that's when they would realize most of their the discount from this contract with deviations. So with that, I'd ask that the commission approve today's
joining the meeting.
This five-year contract with deviation period is divided into essentially what I see as two periods, a rehabilitation period and an initial ongoing operation period. The rehabilitation period consists of the first 18 months of the five-year contract, and that consists mainly, as Mr. Keck indicated, of hoisting operations, and the way I see it, it's probably some larger volume water pumping to lower the level of the water in the mine shafts. The initial ongoing operations period, the last 3.5 years of the five-year, we'll see decreases in hoisting and water pumping. It's my understanding that the water pumping at that point will just be necessary to maintain a level, not to drop the level anymore, because it will have already been dropped through the rehabilitation period. According to the filing, Black Hills Power anticipates a 4,200 kVA demand during the first 18 months of the rehabilitation period, of which Black Hills Power will only bill a 1,500 kVA fixed contract demand during the winter and shoulder months, and a 3,200 kVA fixed contract demand during the three summer months. During that summer period, there will be a 2,500 kVA cap during the summer periods. During the remaining 3.5 years of the contract, Black Hills anticipates a 3,240 kVA demand, which Black Hills Power will only bill 2,500 kVA fixed contract demand, and that will also see a 3,500 kVA summer cap during the three summer months. Additionally, as Mr. Keck indicated, that Black Hills Power can limit the power consumption to 1,500 and 2,500 kVA during the respected periods should the system conditions exist that may limit power delivery. Black Hills Power has stated in a data response that they will not seek to subsidize this contract of deviations through other customers. I guess with that, staff would recommend approval of this contract with deviations with the condition that this approval does not predetermine a commission decision at the time of a future rate case proceedings regarding rate treatments concerning possible cost recovery shortfalls resulting from rates approved in this docket.
Questions for Mr. Singer or Mr. Keck? Go ahead. Sure.
Perhaps this might even be Mr. Singer. When people state that the demand will be limited during the summer months at 3,500, that's the demand usage, isn't it? That's not the amount of that's the charge as opposed to their usage is not being restricted, is it?
This is Jim Keck. I'd like to address that. What we're saying when we limit that, we're talking about their peak energy use, their KVA. So for the first initial 18-month period where we're billing them for 1,500 KVA, and then they had unlimited use above that unlimited use comes down to, and we expect that unlimited use to be 4,200. But during the summertime, we will limit them to 2,500 kVA, and then if they go above it, then we bill them for the additional kVA that they use. So we're not actually limiting them. What they'll be able to do is shift their loads or wait until we're beyond that curtailment period.
Thank you. Could you, Mr. Keck, could you also touch on any potential effect this might have on any other ratepayers? Is there a potential for this to affect any other ratepayers' costs?
We don't, no, this won't affect any other ratepayers' costs. And we're not asking to have those other customer rates subsidized by this discount.
Can you give us an idea of approximately how much you expect the enterprise to save through this type of through the discount?
Sure. What we expect and the figures we came up with were estimated figures between the executive director Dave Snyder and I, and we expect that they'd be running a 4,200 kVA during their first 18 months of operation of their commissioning and rehabilitation. And so if we're billing them at 1,500 kVA for the shoulder and winter months and 3,200 kVA for the summer months, they would realize a savings at today's rates of about $169,000 for that 18-month period. Keep in mind that when we're at the highest cost for our operation, we're able to limit them quite a bit. Then during the last 3.5 years of their initial ongoing operation, we expect that their peak demand would be about 3,240 kVA. We will be billing them at 2,500. So their total discount over the next 3.5 years would be at the rate of $55,000 a year. And that $169,000 figure I gave you, that's a per-year number, too.
You had originally said that was for 18 months on the 169, but that's for a 12-month period, the 169?
Yeah, that's what it looked, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Other commissioner questions? Okay, I will go ahead and I have.
Go ahead.
This is Greg Rissler, Mr. Keck. It's my understanding after listening to both you and Mr. Singer that what would happen in a rate case would be the class cost of service study would reflect all the components of actual usage. It's just that the cost not allocated based on this rate break, not allocated to the large user, this particular large user, would still stay within that class. They would not be assigned across to other classes. I don't know how clear that was, but if you understand it, is that the agreement that I believe you've reached with staff?
Well, and in addition to not covering other rate classes, we've also agreed that it will not subsidize or affect their existing rate class either.
Yeah, so I think my understanding is correct based on what I've heard. Then that representation that means whatever discount, if it can be termed that, within this contract will stay between Black Hills Power and Light and this customer, and it will have no effect on the other customers as far as increasing rates in some future rate case.
That's right.
Mr. Keck, this is Dusty Johnson. On your cover letter for the filing, you note that after the commissioning and startup period, that the lab will revert to Black Hills Power's standard general service large tariff. I was a little surprised by that. Is that what we expect would happen, that this large customer would just fall into a typical tariff? Or is that sort of a default presumption?
That is the best rate available for them. If they were indeed a much larger user and grows to that point, then we would move them towards our industrial contract rate.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Keck. It just seems to me that if this is a large enough user where there can be some benefits to providing these discounts on a contract with deviations, I mean, what changes between the startup time and when it's a fully operational underground science laboratory?
They'll have, I guess the biggest change is they would have experiments coming in that pay for this, help them pay for the power. They would be charging for the experiments that are coming in. Would be the biggest thing that I would see.
So it's easier to charge the feds the standard rate than perhaps a startup operation, huh? My other question would be, you'd note that during peak periods you would be able to curtail their load. Will they adjust their operation of the facility, or do they have their own backup generation?
They don't have backup generation. What they would do, and we have interval metering in place, and so we'll be able to see what their load profile looks like. What I would expect that they would do is they probably would either limit their hoisting during that period of time, or maybe cut back on some pumping during that period of time. There are some things that they can do. Pumping in particular, they could shift that to off-peak period.
Sure, that makes sense. Thanks very much, Mr. Keck. Other commissioner or advisor comments or questions? Mr. Smith.
At that lower level, that's still adequate, I assume, to avoid losing ground in terms of the water level reduction?
I don't quite understand what you're asking.
At the limited amount, the facility won't lose ground in terms of when the reduced pumping regime is implemented to reduce the capacity that they're using?
No. What I would expect, it's taken, it's almost been 2 years or more of filling up till this point, cutting it back for a period of 8 hours in a particular day or a little bit during the month, during the summer months, during on-peak times. That I don't see that as limiting them at all in regards to the water.
Other questions? Commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, we can move to some proposed action. And I would just note that Mr. Singer did ask for us to state that there's no predetermination on future rate treatment for this. Anyone have a motion? I'll move that the commission approve the contract with deviations, noting that there is no predetermination on future rate treatment. Motion's been made. No second is required. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. This issue reminds me a little bit. Last year I received a letter from a third grader who said that he had to write a letter to a public official as part of a class project, and he thanked me for saving Ellsworth Air Force Base. The Tully
Keep. You're welcome.
Yes, that's right. So I was very happy to know that I was an integral part of that, and now the commissioners and the commission can explain how we were intimately involved with the Homestake Underground Science Laboratory as well. So
I would like to say, if I could, Mr. Chairman, congratulations to Black Hills for their good corporate citizenship. I know that the PUC has encouraged utilities to participate in this fashion across the state of South Dakota, help with economic development. And Black Hills Power, on the figures that they've given us today, appear to be participating from a standpoint of approximately $450,000 over the five-year period. So they've certainly stepped up to the plate in a financial fashion to help out the the project there. So thank you very much, Black Hills.
Thank you to Mr. Singer, Mr. Keck. With that, we'll proceed to electric item number 2. This deals with an addendum to an agreement regarding an assigned service area between Coddington Clark Electric and the City of Watertown. Question for the Commission is, shall it approve the addendum to the agreement? And I should note that we have on our addendum a slightly revised blurb, as the technical term we use, that does note that the extension of this agreement would be in perpetuity rather than for a fixed time period. With that, we'll look to either of the filers. Is anyone representing Coddington Clark Electric or the City of Watertown wish to speak?
Hey, Your Honor, Tom Burns is here.
Great. Go ahead, Mr. Burns.
I have the General Manager of Coddington Clark Electric and the Superintendent of the Municipal Utilities for the City also here with me. And
we would have appreciated an invitation to that party, Mr. Burns. Huh? Go ahead.
I believe that this agreement between the city and the co-op is probably the first of its kind in the state. It was initially entered in 1993 to resolve annexation issues. And initially, the agreement was made perpetual, and then when it came to the PUC, because it was kind of a first of a kind, the commissioners wanted to see it renewed every 3 years to see how things would work, and that's going on now since 1993, and it's worked well for the consumers of both entities and for the entities themselves, but, of course, the consumers really, in effect, own both entities. And there's some history behind it now, and I understand a very similar agreement between Oahe Electric and the City of Pier has been approved in perpetuity, so we believe it's time that we can go ahead and make the agreement perpetual and not have to come back to you every 3 years.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mr. Burns. At this time, we'd look toward staff. Mr. Rounds, Mr. Solem, Ms. Kramer.
Mr. Chairman, this is Nathan Solem with staff. Staff recommends approval of the new addendum, as the provisions in the original agreement covering electric service after city annexation still remain in the public interest and eliminate or reduce duplication of facilities per the requirements of SDCL 4934A55 governing such changes.
Great. Any questions by commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, does anyone have a motion?
Didn't hear if Nathan had any suggestions other than to approve the addendum. So I will make a motion to approve the addendum to the agreement regarding the assigned service area.
Motion has been made. Any comments on the motion? I would just note I agree with the motion, and it does make sense to have, I mean, all of the others that we do of these are perpetual, so this makes sense to get this in alignment. Any other comments? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck. Hanson.
Aye.
Johns votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thank you, Mr. Burns and Mr. Solem.
Yes.
We will turn to natural gas. Item NG07-018 deals with filing by Northwestern Energy for an approval of tariff revisions. Shall the commission approve the tariff revisions today? That's the question. Mr. Decker, welcome.
Thank you. Jeff Decker with Northwestern Energy. Clyde Gross is on the phone as well this morning. I'll give a brief summary of the filing. And then if you have questions, he'll be here to over the phone to answer questions as well. As we operate under the tariff, and as time has gone on, we've seen three opportunities to maybe improve the way our tariff handles certain situations that we face with the gas industry. One of those is with the grain dryers, and one of the things we've seen with our larger grain dryers, which are on rate 85, which is an interruptible rate, but over last year from 1st of October to the end of October, we saw an index gas price increase substantially. I think it was in the vicinity of $4 to $5. By the end of the month, it was over $8. And what happens is that through the true-up, the residential customers end up picking up that cost. And so the change that we're proposing is for the larger grain dryers, which basically ends up being most grain dryers with the exception of the farm dryers. But most grain dryers, the larger ones, would be moved to rate 86, which allows for a daily cashing out of their price, or they can contract their price. But this will prevent those costs from falling through to the residential customers. Now, the grain dryers see this as an advantage because they can lock in their October, November price in June, July, August. So when the drying season starts, they know what it's going to cost them all the way through instead of being at the mercy of the market for October 1 and November 1, even into December, as may be the case this year. That's the benefit of this. So in the end, it helps residential customers and it helps the grain dryers. The second thing we looked at changing was the Rate 86 true-up. Currently, the tariff states that any true-up balance for the Rate 86 customers, which is about 80 customers, and just to back up a minute, these are the customers, schools, and businesses that can lock in their gas price for the winter. It's a program we started a couple years ago, and at the time, we kind of mirrored our regular true-up in that we'll pass back the over-under recovery balance over a 12-month period. What we found would be a lot better in practice is to just pass that back to them at the end of the winter season. I think it would be in June. And so they've locked in their gas price for November through April. At the end of that period, whatever the true-up balance is, we would put a one-time credit or charge on the bill, and that would replace what the tariff states now with doing this monthly. We sent out an email to all these customers, approximately 80 of them, asked them for a response by the end of September, heard back from several of them. Several of them had questions, mostly just wanted clarification that they understood, and we did not have any negatives on the Rate 86 or the grain dryers. The third change we're proposing is the imbalance cash out for customers, and this is only for the very large customers. There would be 10 or less customers affected by this change. Basically, what we're doing in the case of a large plant, if they would shut down for a day and not change their nomination, Northwestern can end up with significant penalties from our pipeline supplier, and those penalties would end up going back to this residential and small commercial customers. And so what we're doing is changing the tariff so that we have the opportunity to charge that penalty directly to the customer that causes the penalty. Of course, our hope is we won't have to charge that penalty, that the fact that it's there will cause those customers to be alert to the need to change their nomination so that we don't have this situation. But it just gives the company opportunity to collect a penalty, hopefully put some teeth in the tariff, for lack of a better term. These are the changes we're proposing. I guess we'd take any questions you might have.
Thanks, Mr. Decker. Staff comments.
I think this is Keith Snyder from Commission staff. I think that Mr. Decker covered everything fairly well. A few additional notes I'd just like to add. In shifting the grain dryers from rate 85 to rate 86, if they have that threshold load, connected load, we'll increase their customer charge from $80 to $280 if they're on option A, and if they're on option B, from $130 to $330. I think I had those right. Secondly, staff has a small concern with the Rate 86 true-up mechanism in that I don't think it changes the calculation at all. It doesn't change the amount that is going to be recovered through the true-up, whether it be an over or under recovery. It's just that it's all going to be in one lump sum now in July 1st instead of spreading it over 12 months. In discussions with Northwestern, they indicated that history has shown that true-up amount has been fairly insignificant. So it's not like customers are going to receive a huge bill come July 1st when if there was a large bill, it's easier to pay for that over 12 months. Just a small concern that staff had. And additionally, on the daily imbalance penalties, staff believes it's probably a great mechanism in making sure that the customer who causes the cost actually has to pay for that cost. And along with several other of these changes, it's removing some of the cost from the residential customers, as Jeff indicated, back to where they are actually caused. And also, We did make one small recommendation to Northwestern, just to clarify some language in the tariff. I think it was just a word or two change. That change has been made, and it was actually filed yesterday. You should have received it yesterday or this morning. Again, Northwestern has either contacted all these customers either via phone or through electronic means. It appears from what they've indicated that they have not had any negative comments to this, a few questions, but no negative comments strongly opposing this by any means. So with that, staff would recommend approval of all three changes.
If I could just make one comment, I think the 86A customers, I think they go from 80 to 130, I think it is. And then the Bs are, the B customers would be 330. They'd be the very large. Most of the customers are going to go to the A rate.
Thanks, Mr. Decker. Commissioner Advisor, questions? You know, Dusty Johnson here. Mr. Decker, I have some questions about communication, and there was a letter that was filed the other day. It didn't seem to explain very much. It just sort of very roughly went to consumers, said, we're changing 85, we're changing 86, we're changing 80. It very briefly described, not even described, just mentioned the three changes being made. I had a little concern that a typical customer or even a sophisticated customer would be able to look at that letter and understand what's really going on to them. Can you kind of walk me through maybe your communication efforts beyond that letter?
Okay. And I'm not sure which letter. Did you receive the email that we sent to the Rate 86 customers? All right. I'm not sure which letter.
I don't think I did. I got a letter that was filed with the commission yesterday that was a response to staff discovery inquiries.
Okay.
That was filed. It was a very short, I should have brought it with me, but maybe a three-paragraph letter. And
okay,
it looks like Mr. Singer's digging for it. But that I didn't see an email if one went out.
Okay, that's fine. What we did do is send an email out to the Rate 86 customers just describing the change going from monthly. And we said in there that it could be a charge or it could be a credit, either one. And with the imbalance change, I think we've had discussions with the three marketers that would affect. And so we ended up on the phone with them, one we even visited with face-to-face. So I think they all three understand very well the changes of the imbalance. With the grain dryers, I know Clyde has had some phone calls with a number of them discussing the changes. Some of them were even, their only negative was is that we didn't have it in place this year.
So the 86, the people who are affected by the 86 true-up revision, they all received an email in addition to any letter? Okay, and that email had additional information about the effect of such revision.
Right.
Okay, and then the 20, the folks who are being moved from 85 to 86 shifted there, the 20 affected customers. They, I think in – I'll speak in generalities because it was filed confidential, but you mentioned that a certain number of them received a letter, but then when you mentioned who received a letter, there were a fewer number of entities listed. Is that because those entities are power purchasers for or natural gas purchasers for a number of those customers? And so by sending one letter, you were able to hit a number of customers?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. There was one instance of that.
Okay, good. Mr. Singer described the 86 true-up, the one-time either June or July payment, as a relatively small amount. Can you give me a rough ballpark? I mean, is this half of somebody's monthly bill? Is this a quarter? Is this 100% of someone's monthly bill? In general.
Clyde, you want to help me out with that? What have you seen?
Staff or commission, the credit was on a customer whose annual bill was around $50,000. The credit was around $400.
That is a small percentage.
Yes.
An accurate description by Mr. Singer, certainly. So, all right, thanks, Mr. Gross. I appreciate it. Any other commissioner questions? Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner Hanson.
Thank you. Mr. Decker, could you tell me approximately when that email was sent to those folks, those three?
The rate, okay, now the rate 86.
The one that was, that you stated you sent when Commissioner Johnson asked you if, regarding notification.
Okay. And just to be clear, because the three imbalance customers,
mm-hmm.
Two of them received the filing. We sent them a copy of the filing.
Okay.
The one that did not, I talked to soon after the filing, and I know that that individual pulled the filing off the internet. And then subsequently we had face-to-face conversations with that individual.
All right. I appreciate your answering in that fashion. It just sounded like a little dilatory and notifying people you're changing rates, and it was disconcerting to me that you'd send an email at a late hour and tell people that the rates were being changed. So thank you for answering that question. You said during your testimony that there would be some prevention of costs falling, I believe you said falling through to residential customers as a result of this particular change. Will there be a potential continuation of any falling through of costs to residential customers if the large users in this particular instance lock in the costs over a period of time?
No, the customers will either have a locked in fixed price or they will be cashed out daily. So those prices will not, or those differences will not fall back through to the residential customers. Right now, these customers buy the index gas. They're not cashed out daily, but basically, I don't know if you call it a monthly cash out, but won't be cashed out near to the detail level that they will be under this change.
So there should be actually with this tariff less challenges, less costs to residential customers?
Yeah, that would be accurate.
Okay. Thank you.
Other commissioner or advisor questions? Yeah, Mr. Islov.
Greg Rislov, Mr. Gross, Mr. Decker. My question would be with regard to the mechanics of locking in that price during the summer, and we're moving people from rate 85 to rate 86. Is this going to present a challenge for any of those people if they decide to lock in during the summer? What would be the mechanics of them doing so?
What happens now is that the rate 86 customers are given, I think, up to 7 different opportunities throughout the summer to lock in their gas price. And so Clyde watches that gas market. When he sees that there's a low in the market, he sends out an email and gives these customers the opportunity to lock in at that price. They can choose to, or they can choose to wait for a subsequent offer.
Other questions? Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner Kolbeck. Steve, hold on just a second. We're having a hard time hearing you. We're going to turn up the volume on our end, but we'd ask you to speak up if you can. Okay, go ahead.
This might be a duplicate, but all I wanted to know was, of those customers who have been contacted, have many of them taken into their own means to contact us about this, Mr. Sanger?
Yes, we did. We did have one individual who contacted the commission asking about means of intervention. We relayed to that customer how they would intervene, and I am about 95% confident this is the same customer that had that Mr. Decker indicated that the company had face-to-face communications with this customer, and it's my assumption that since they had the face-to-face communications with them, we have not received an intervention. So to answer your question directly, yes, we did have some communications with a customer directly.
An excellent question, Commissioner Kolbeck. Mr. Decker is, with the face-to-face, did you get the feeling that most of the individual's concerns were addressed by Northwestern?
I think the individual understood our need to do this. I mean, I think Clyde has a good analogy, and that is if the state calls us and says that we're going to give you a speeding ticket if you speed, we're not happy about it, but we understand the need and why there needs to be speeding rules, and that's kind of the case with this tariff change. And after that meeting, I think that's a good way to look at it. I think they understand the changes. Did they totally like them? I don't know that they do.
And again, I don't need a hard number. I'm not going to hold you anything. But can you give me an idea of how often Rate 85 customers have been curtailed, interrupted, rather?
In recent years, I don't know that they have been.
This is Clyde Gross. The last interruption to our Rate 85 interruptible was 1998.
Thanks very much, Mr. Gross. Any other questions? Mr. Smith.
In the Rate 87 language, the term cash out, is that really a cash out, or does that just mean calculation? Does that mean it's a daily calculation of what the imbalance is? I mean, money isn't changing hands every day, is it,
I think it's both. It's a calculation of the amount of cash out for the day. And Clyde, you want to jump in on this?
The actual cash out happens at the end of the month.
Okay.
But you're establishing a balance every day, debit or credit.
Okay, so that
cash out.
The daily, what happens daily is the calculation, and that makes it more accurate in terms of not averaging then among the class to the extent you otherwise would.
Correct.
Is that okay? And then, so the 87 people, then their actual credits occur every month, and the Rate 86s will happen once a year in July.
That's correct.
Is that right?
Yep. And I mean, the Rate 87s, well, just like the 86s, it may be a charge or it may be a credit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, does anyone have a motion? I would move that the commission approve the tariff revisions with the recently revised wording that was received by this commission. Motion has been made. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Decker. Mr. Gross.
Thank you.
Natural gas item number 2 is NG07-019. This deals with filing by MDU for approval of an amendment to a contract with deviations with Merilot Corporation. And this time we'd look toward anyone from MDU.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. Commissioners, this is Tammy Averly with MDU. The request before you is to extend the current agreement with Merilot Corporation, large manufacturing customer on Montana Dakota's natural gas system, for another one-year term. The current agreement is set to expire on 10/31/07. The contract continues to meet the needs of the customer while providing benefits to Montana Dakota's other Black Hills service area customers through the recovery of distribution-related fixed costs and pipeline capacity costs. The agreement executed for the upcoming contract year reflects a change in the determination of pipeline-related charges to be paid under the agreement from a 100% load factor allocation basis to a load factor allocation of 75%. The agreement includes the continuation of a negotiated distribution rate, which is also a deviation from the standard distribution rates, which has than previously approved by this commission. Merilot is paying pipeline-related demand charges under the current agreement, as I said, on 100% load factor allocation. Pipeline charges were approved to be assessed on that basis for competitive reasons and to recognize the benefits of retaining this high load factor customer on the system. And this change to a 75% load factor determination reflects a movement toward Merilot's actual load factor, which recognizes a slight change in their load profile and also recognizes the pipeline capacity in this region. However, existing firm customers will continue to benefit under this renegotiated contract through Merilot's contribution toward the pipeline fixed costs and distribution recovery. We request you approve this contract with deviation to continue to provide service to Merilot. I am available for questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Averly. Staff comments.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. This is Dave Jacobson from Commission staff. Tammy, I think, mentioned about every point I could think of. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'd recommend approval.
Questions for Mr. Jacobson and Ms. Averly? Yeah, Commissioner Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noted in looking at the staff notes and information on this that the drop to 75% will increase what Merlot will pay for the same amount of gas and decrease what other firm service customers will pay. And does that mean that residential customers will, in effect, could very well experience lower costs?
Commissioner Hanson, yes, the change would be reflected through the PGA process where these pipeline costs are recovered. So it would, those costs that are increased costs to be recovered from Merlot would effectively offset the other firm customers' requirements for demand charges.
So within the tariff, this doesn't mean that it will increase the profits of the company. It does it necessarily mean that other ratepayers then would in fact experience lower costs, or is that just a possibility?
Commissioner Hanson, it is a reality that they would it would benefit the other customers, and as the change is all related to pipeline recovery, pipeline costs, it will not affect the profits of Montana Dakota. These are costs that are passed through the purchase gas cost adjustment mechanism.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I almost hesitate to ask questions on occasion because I know that Mr. Ryzlov has to clarify anytime that I ask a question. Thank you, Greg.
If you're inviting me to jump in, I think the phrase is, they won't necessarily mean a rate decrease, but at any given level of pipeline charges, the residential customer will now pay less than what they otherwise would have paid. So if there's a spike in rates, they'd still end up paying more this coming year than last year, but it would be less under this change than what it would have been before this change was made, just to clarify.
And I always appreciate those clarifications. Thank you.
Other questions? Yeah, Mr. Jacobs, comment. Go ahead.
I would just add that Tammy alluded to this, but the reason for this discount was because of a competitive situation. And we had extremely good evidence of what was going to happen. The bypass plans for the alternative pipeline were all drawn up, and it was ready to be constructed. And that was the circumstance behind this discount.
And I think that historical perspective always helps. You know, there are reasons that we do what we do. Thanks, Mr. Jacobson. Other questions or comments? Anyone have a motion?
I move that the commission approve the amendment to the contract with deviations.
Motion has been made. No second is required. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck.
Aye.
Hanson.
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks very much to Ms. Averly, Mr. Jacobson, everyone. Thanks. Natural gas item number 3 is NG07-020, and this is in the matter of the inadequate reason for disconnection, failure to provide service, and tariff violation made by Mid-American Energy. This issue is also taken up on our addendum for today, and there is a revised question. Today, shall the commission grant the motion to dismiss? Staff did file a motion to dismiss. And with that, we'll look first to staff for any comments they'd like to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kara Semler for staff. I do believe that staff's motion to dismiss of October 18th does speak for itself. We were able to resolve the consumer's issue and feel pleased with the result and would ask the commission to dismiss the motion.
Thank you very much. We'd look to Mid-American, Reagan Gunn, Karen Huizenga, see if they have any comments.
Yes, this is Karen Huizenga from Mid-American, and we appreciate the staff working with us to resolve the issue.
Thanks very much. Commissioner Advisor, questions? and I have a clarification. I don't have your letter in front of me, Ms. Semler, so this is probably just me not reading closely enough. But I presume that both the reconnection and disconnection charges were forgiven as part of this. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Because the disconnection charges were the real big ticket item. And I think because that was the $2,300, the disconnection charges. So, okay, good. Thanks very much. Other questions? Hearing none, any action? I'll move that the commission grant the motion to dismiss. Motion has been made. Is there any discussion? I would just note that obviously this is what we want. The customer was made whole in their mind, and thank you to MidAmerican for a willingness to work with staff and the customer and bringing about a favorable resolution to this. Any other comments?
I just echo those sentiments and we work together to get it dismissed and get the gentleman and the gas back on. Just nothing to make misunderstanding. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thank you to MidAmerican and to staff.
Thank you.
With that, we will proceed to telecommunications. Item number one is TC06-191, and this does deal with EchoStar Satellite LLC owning the trademark Dish Network and their failure to register as telemarketers and the solicitation that they made to those registered on the Do Not Call list. The questions for the commission today are, shall the commission grant the motion to dismiss and close the docket without prejudice, or alternatively, how shall the commission proceed? Staff did file a motion to dismiss, and as a result, we will look first to Ms. Semler for her comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kara Semler for staff. Staff believes this is the best way to handle these consumer complaints. In the multi-state action, we anticipate they will achieve the best result possible. I believe our motion stands for itself, and we'd ask for it to be dismissed here in the PUC. And again, if the consumers aren't adequately assisted in this multi-state, we can always refile here before the commission.
Thanks very much, Ms. Semler. I see Mr. Van Camp at the microphone. Mr. Van Camp representing EchoStar Satellite.
Yes, Mr. Commissioner Bill Van Camp here on behalf of EchoStar Satellite LLC. We would support staff's motion and continue to offer our assistance to staff, as we've discussed before, if complaints are received, so that we can forward those to the proper people and try to run down who those people are. Again, due to logistics, sometimes it's not within the ability of this commission maybe to go after some of those individuals, but certainly bringing them to the attention of EchoStar does help EchoStar track down those people and try to get to the bottom of what is going out there in its independent retailer environment.
Thanks, Mr. Van Camp. Questions by commissioners or advisors? Yeah, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Semler, I recognize the nuances of the without dismissing without prejudice, and you stating that we would be able to take further actions if we deem necessary. But if the multi-state action did reach a conclusion and an agreement, would we still be able to, if we were not satisfied with that agreement, still be able to bring this before us?
I'll look to Mr. Smith for assistance, but my understanding of res judicata would prevent the commission from trying those same facts or issues a second time.
Yeah, I think it would be very difficult. You'd have to somehow, at a minimum, we would have to show that this commission isn't speaking for the state of South Dakota, because you'd have to be a different party, quote, and maybe we are. I don't know, but I'll put it this way. I think it'd be a tough case to make.
So in all likelihood, we are giving up our any opportunity, so to speak, that we would have to hear this. I'm assuming that there will be.
If they reach a resolution, that would be true. That's a binding legal order. I would say, with res judicata, there's always this and that. But ordinarily, if a judgment is entered on behalf of a party in a case, that's it. And assuming in either event, whether it's us adjudicating it or someone else, and the state of South Dakota is in effect the a party to the case, I would think we'd have a tough time arguing it. So if a resolution is reached, binding resolution, it's not 100%, but I would say it's highly likely that our involvement in these particular facts is probably over with. Not involvement, but the ability to second-guess it is probably not going to be there.
I could, Mr. Chairman, if I could continue on that line, could a subsequent, could a decision made on that level preclude us from a future hearing on subsequent offenses? For instance, if activities continued next year, would we have the ability then to hear those?
Again, without knowing what might ultimately be reached, and I don't know I don't know what's going on, you know, in this thing, but other than what Denise said last time we were up here, depending upon what resolution was resolved, it would be unbelievably surprising to me if the multi-state group that takes this on would enter into any kind of a resolution that binds anybody in terms of future violations. I really would be astonished if that were to happen. And,
Could they reach an agreement? Excuse me. Could they reach an agreement whereby future offenses would be
deprive us of jurisdiction?
Right.
No.
Okay.
Not in my opinion. Not with us. Not without the PUC being a party to it.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? I might just note that the analogy in my mind that seems to fit for this is, you know, sometimes if you have a criminal investigation, you've got a number of different law enforcement agencies involved. Sometimes it makes sense for one agency to take a lead over another, sometimes you can work across purposes if you have too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak. And so I think staff has become convinced that, you know, just like with any other investigation, it makes sense maybe for somebody else to take a different lead role. I would note, though, that I do think EchoStar made it very clear in its filings at past meetings that they have taken a number of steps of initiatives to try to exercise maybe greater control over their third-party vendors. I mean, sting operations, and they fired certain vendors. And in my mind, at least, I do believe that the sort of action initiated by commission staff has helped to has helped EchoStar to understand how important it is to review its relationship with its independent telemarketing firms. And so I used to get these calls 10 times a day at my house, and I haven't received one since about a couple of weeks after this commission initiated action. Now, maybe there's a cause-effect, maybe it's just a correlation, but I do think that what the commission does and other state commissions and other enforcement agencies, regulatory agencies do, does matter. And so I would just note that the affiliates of EchoStar or their independent contractors, whatever relationship exists, it doesn't appear as though there's quite as much bad stuff going on as there used to be. So thanks to EchoStar for making those facts clear to us at the last time we spoke, and thanks to commission staff for their efforts. Any other comments or questions?
I just have one, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, go ahead. Commissioner Kolbeck.
I was just wondering, how involved is our staff going to be continuing investigations? Do they have a seat at the table, or are we
This is Kara Semler for staff. We're first going to communicate directly and individually with all of our complainants. They all have an individual file here in mine and in Ms. Gregg's office, and we're going to communicate directly with all of them so they now know what's happened to their file. And we intend to stay in contact with the agency that's going to take over. Ms. Gregg particularly has a personal relationship with many of the employees at that agency, so we intend to stay on top of it and aware, and if need be, we could file something here in the commission in the future.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hanson.
I appreciate the comments that you made earlier, Mr. Chairman, and I agree wholeheartedly with them. The challenge that I've been trying to figure out here is dismissing without prejudice or simply deferring it. And I'd appreciate to either Mr. Smith or Ms. Semler explaining the challenges to doing something like that, as opposed to just simply taking a position at this juncture and saying that we dismiss it without prejudice. What are the pros and cons of just simply deferring this action till later, until we see what takes place?
Thank you, Commissioner. That is actually something that we did discuss. Ms. Gregg, myself, and our executive director, we did discuss that. And at this point, we had a sit-down meeting. We didn't want any lag time between what happens here and what's happening in the other investigation. So we did sit down with the lead agency on this, and we advised them of the names, numbers, contacts of those people within the PUC that complained. And we just thought it would be cleanest if the docket came to a close at this time within the PUC, as those names are now being handled by this lead agency. We thought it was cleanest. I don't think there's any particular benefit to doing it this way, and it might work just as well to defer it.
Commissioner Hansen?
Yes.
If I may.
Yes, Bill.
As a publicly traded company, EchoStar Satellite LLC wouldn't want an open docket. We would move at some level for a resolution one way or the other, along with the multi-state investigation going on. But
certainly,
to leave this one forestalled, that's why I'm comfortable dismissing it without prejudice, so that if staff chooses to rebring some of these matters back, we can go back to where we were before, as opposed to leaving it open. A publicly traded company has to report any litigation that it's involved in, both with an individual and with a regulatory body. By dismissing it with prejudice, we don't have to do that.
Without prejudice.
Without prejudice, excuse me.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's dismissed. Certainly staff can, if they're not satisfied, if the multi-state investigation were to fall apart, and if you were to receive additional complaints, certainly you can bring that back.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, did you have any comments?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could see with leaving it deferred is it just kind of creates something too of a legal limbo as to what it is, I guess, vis-a-vis the other, what other proceedings there might be. This is something I didn't look at, but the only issue I can conceivably think of is maybe we need to look at this. Are there any potential statute of limitations problems with it? I'm not aware of any particular within our code. I don't think we have one, but so I'm not aware of anything like that. But
I would assume it would be a 6-year statute of limitations.
That's what I would probably think. There's really nothing. That's in general what we've operated under, is that we're operating under the general
violation of statutory duty.
Right, or contract, whatever you want to call it, limit. And so other than that, I can't think of anything. There's really no advantage to leaving the proceeding open if the words without prejudice means we're at liberty to refile it at any time.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So I'm replaying my words over in my head. I think I said 10 times a day I got those calls, which is not accurate. It's probably closer to 10 times a week. So any other questions or comments?
I got them 10 times a day.
Well, you're a lot more popular than I am. Any other questions? Hearing none.
Well, Commissioner, I would just like to, if I might, I think it's important to follow up on what you said, Mr. Chairman, that in a very recent instance, Ms. Semler was contacted by an employee of the Bureau of Finance and Management, who I know. They relayed that information to EchoStar. EchoStar was able, in conjunction with the information that Ms. Semler received, track these people down. They pointedly lied to Ms. Semler on the phone about who they were, where they were, what they did. EchoStar was able to find these people. Of course, we would encourage you to prosecute them, but logistically that might not be possible. But they are in the process of having their contracts reviewed by EchoStar and possibly terminated because of that cooperation that I spoke of.
Well, and Mr. Van Camp, I think that's a very good point to bring out. I mean, what do we want? I mean, what are the purpose of these statutes? And these are really to keep South Dakotans from being harassed. And to the extent that we can get that accomplished by having a good working relationship with your client, the commission staff, and you know, other folks, I mean, people want phone calls to stop. They don't necessarily want somebody drawn and quartered. They want them to stop.
Absolutely.
And I think we've made tremendous progress in that direction.
Absolutely.
Ms. Semler?
Oh, I was just going to add, Ms. Gregg could comment to this. She would receive 5 complaints a day sometimes, and we haven't received any in some time. So clearly something's changed for the better.
This is Deb Gregg from staff. Our calls, complaints regarding Dish Network and the calls received have incredibly decreased to none. I mean, we don't receive any, so it has worked.
Well, and of course, there is, that's really a concern about looking forward. That doesn't mean that somebody in the universe isn't concerned about looking backward and finding out who is in violation of this state and presumably other states' laws. And I think it is good to note that, you know, we understand that there may be other activity by other agencies on that front. So we're certainly not turning a blind eye to what happened in the past. Thanks. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, does anyone have a motion?
A motion and
motion has been made. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck.
Aye.
Hanson.
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thank you very much, Mr. Van Camp, Ms. Gregg, Ms. Semler, everyone. Thanks. Telecom item number 2, TC07-104, is filing by Prairie Wave for an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates. And the question we'll deal with today is simply, shall the commission grant the petition for intervention to AT&T Communications? We have someone representing AT&T Communications here to address the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Van Camp here, again, on behalf of AT&T Communications of the Midwest. AT&T filed what I would call a limited intervention in docket number TC07-104, requesting that if Prairie Wave were to be granted an exemption, they'd be granted an exemption for 1 year only. Currently, Prairie Wave's switch access rate is considerably higher than the incumbent Quest's switch access rate, I believe upwards of 5 cents. Prairie Wave did file a switch access cost study in 2004 that was approved, and they're requesting, based on administrative rule, that they be exempted from filing an additional cost study. We just merely think, with the rulemaking docket and process that the Commission's aware of, that they shouldn't be granted an indefinite stay. We'd be comfortable with an indefinite stay, of course, if Prairie Wave would drop down to the Quest rate, but at this point, we think that intervention is clearly warranted, as AT&T is a party in interest. AT&T serves a number of customers in this area. The rates that are charged for switched access by Prairie Wave do ultimately affect the consumers of South Dakota and the use of AT&T product in the state.
Thanks, Mr. Van Camp. Anyone from Prairie Wave wish to comment on the intervention filing?
This is Bill Heaston, Mr. Chairman, representing Prairie Wave Community Telephone, which is the ILEC, and Prairie Wave is the incumbent in that territory, not Quest. So any comparison there between, or any attempt to tie the two together, seems to be unwarranted, especially under commission rules. We have no objection to the intervention. They certainly have a pecuniary interest in having a right to intervene as a matter of right, but to single Prairie Wave Community Telephone out for a one-year exemption, it would be a bit unusual, and so we would object to that. I think under the rules, these types of things are usually granted for 3 years, and that was what we filed for.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Yeah, no, thanks, Mr. Heaston. We'll look toward the staff, Ms. Schinger, Ms. Kramer. Their comments?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff, and staff would recommend granting the petition for intervention.
Did you wish to weigh in on any of the facts that people are...
No, I don't at this time. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Any questions by commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, commission action is in order. I'd move that the commission grant the petition for intervention to AT&T Communications. Motion has been made. No seconds required. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we will proceed to vote. Colbeck.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks very much to everyone. I believe that concludes the business for the commission this morning. Hearing no further business, we stand adjourned.